Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
And tonight we're discussing Season 4, Episode 15, entitled Us. This felt to me, after the second watch, the first watch I didn't really want to give it a rating of any kind because I wasn't sure. I was so busy on Twitter, wasn't sure if I missed things. Second time through, I liked it maybe slightly more, but it was still very meh to me. It was just very middle of the road. Things happened because they needed to happen, and there were a lot of bad decisions on multiple people's parts, and it just didn't feel that interesting to me, even with the reuniting of Maggie and Glenn.
I can't hear the word us without wanting to add a motherfucker to it and did bro hug somebody based on my experience watching The Wire.
Okay. I don't get that reference. It's been too long since I've seen The Wire, but...
Well, you need to watch it again.
Apparently.
Take that as a lesson. I thought... I laughed a lot on this episode. I thought it was very funny. I don't know if that's what they were going for.
I think they were. I think Eugene is comedy relief to a large degree.
Which is an interesting choice for a show like this.
Sure.
Like, he's become, like, the weird, quirky guy in, like, a CSI.
Well, he's become, what's the tall dude from Big Bang Theory?
Oh, Sheldon?
Sheldon. Yeah, he's become Sheldon, right?
Basically, yeah.
Except we don't believe that this guy is actually smart in any way. Sheldon, I believe, is smart.
I don't know. He's got the science of batteries down.
Oh, God. Okay. All right. Yeah, his survival videos on YouTube got him a lot of street cred there.
You get a half volt at 0.03 milliamps by licking a toad and sticking a copper penny up his ass.
Yeah, I don't believe that he has ever put into practice anything that he is saying about survival.
I think he's watched MacGyver and maybe a couple episodes of Mythbusters.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty obvious what kind of dude this is. I mean, he's talking about playing video games. I'm sure he was playing them in his mother's basement. Gotta be. he's watching YouTube videos about survivalism.
Now, wait, that's a hateful stereotype, Jim. I'm sure he was perfectly capable of having his own basement to dwell in, okay?
I'm just saying, when you combine the YouTube survivalism with discussing video games and just a complete lack of any social adeptness at all.
Right.
It all adds up to me as just this guy who is a big loser, just a huge loser.
You know, the surprising thing about that I thought, because I've been a big fan of Glenn, I've been a big fan of Maggie, I was surprised at how little weight they're had for me.
It's because it was so abrupt, I think.
Well, not only that, but I just was like fucking cringing and rolling my eyes at everything that Glenn did.
What do you mean? Like, kiss her?
No. I mean, leading up to this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like they both had this, must get to my missing half at all cost thing going all season. And the fact that it did stretch out over a literal whole season.
Mm-hmm.
That when they finally did, it wasn't, I don't know, it just, there's lots of buildup to it, but the emotional payoff for me, and then I thought, well, we should probably talk about the podcast.
Okay.
We're in peril of doing another instant cast.
All right, let's get into the recap.
No. We have a winner for a wings contest.
Oh, okay.
I want to announce that up front.
Yeah.
Again, Richard from ScreenMonsters.com was generous enough to provide us a, screen-printed replica of Daryl's famous stalker wings, we'll say that. What's the costume designer of The Walking Dead?
I don't know how to say
her name.
Her name
is like Ulian Boolean.
It's a name I have never heard before.
Ulaway Boolean?
Something like that.
Boolean Logic.
I can look it up while you're...
She may or may not have gone by his booth at Walker Stalker Con and said they were almost as good as her originals.
Nice. That's really cool.
And I can say that without legal sanction. I don't know if Richard can. But anyway, he was nice enough to donate a pair of those and a pair of baby size for your little ass kicker. We had a winner for that contest. His name is Mark Drexler. He has been emailed. So, Mark Drexler, come on down. You won the big showcase showdown. Had a huge response. That was a very fun contest. Apparently, a lot of people... we're wanting to get in on it, and I believe we'll probably be doing some work with Richard in the future.
Well, I mean, there are probably a lot of people out there with blank leather vests that could really use some sort of...
Hey, man, like, you get these wings, and you take a trip to Goodwill, your Halloween costume's done.
Totally.
It's fucking done.
You get a nasty, greasy old wig, get a leather vest, and you're good.
Find a 18-year-old to hang out with you for the night.
Yulin Womble is her name.
Yulin Womble. There you go. Yeah. Boolean Wombat.
All right, can we get into the recap now?
Sure. Just if you're interested in more of Richard's work, go to screenmonsters.com. Maybe bug him to get those wings in his shopping cart, because I don't think they're limited editions. And he, judging by our response, he could make a pretty penny off
tens of dollars.
He can make tens. the prettiest penny you've ever seen off of this thing.
All right. So we start out the episode with Eugene and Tara walking down the tracks talking about the virus that may or may not have killed the dinosaurs, and homemade batteries, and being gamers, and just all sorts of really ridiculous shit to start this episode off with. Which, you know, it's funny. It's funny. I'm not going to dock him points for trying to be funny.
He's surprisingly...
That's one thing the show doesn't have a ton of, is humor.
For a scientist, he's surprisingly not up on the latest extinction theories for the dinosaur.
Yeah, not
because,
at all.
Like, it's, people are 99.9% sure is the Chupacabra crater. Or whatever.
Chupacabra crater.
The Chewbacca crater off the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico, the Mexican province, what its country. I'm not a scientist.
Apparently not.
But a big fucking rock.
Definitely not a geologist.
Billy Bob Thornton should have been there 70 million years ago. We might still have dinosaurs. Billy Bob Thornton and...
Ben Affleck.
And Ben Affleck, yep.
And Steve Buscemi.
And Aerosmith. That Aerosmith, the whole fucking thing falls apart.
For sure. So not much to go on in that scene. It was funny, though.
What kind of gamer? What kind of gamer do you think Tara was?
Oh, man. I would say she was an FPS gamer.
Really?
I'm
going to go with casual mobile. Like, she looks like she'd probably tear the shit out of Candy Crush Saga.
Well, I was thinking because she tried to act all tough with the weapons and the guns, and then... didn't actually know how to use them or what they were or anything.
I wonder if there's a crossover between people who are actually tough with guns and people that like video games. I hear in the armed forces, video games like all the rage.
Yeah.
Because you got a lot of downtime and a lot of young males, and they like playing video games. So I guess in future generations, probably that's going to be a high crossover.
Yeah, I would think so. So then Abraham figures out that Tara is... hot for Rosita, I guess. I guess you would describe it that way. I don't know. She's looking down her shirt anyway, and Abraham notices.
Mourning her girlfriend doesn't mean she can't shop on see what's on the menu, Jim.
Sure. Hey, I'm not judging. I'm not judging at
me
all.
Me either.
So that's like the scene where they're talking by the tree while everybody else is sleeping. And there's a lot of stuff in here that's kind of very subtle, I think, about Abraham himself during this episode. Because Tara asks him, like, she says something about the mission being your life, like, I get all that. And then, like, what happens when the mission is over? And Abraham doesn't respond to that. He just kind of, you know, you see kind of a look in his eye. And I think that comes into play a little bit later on. Like, actually, that could very well be the reason why he's following Eugene in the first place. Because, like, obviously, no one has questioned Eugene about... how are you going to save the world? What information do you have? You're probably going to die along the way. Why don't you tell us the information so we all have it?
Yeah.
A much better chance of saving the world.
Right. You're such a dumbass that...
yeah.
So it's interesting that you say that.
So the mission being his life, he might just want to go fight. Like he says, I like to fight. Maybe he just wants to go fight and be on a mission.
Do you think that deep down... do you think Abraham's a true believer, or do you think that this is just a cause that he has chosen to fall in with?
I feel like it's the latter. I think he's just there because he wants something important to do, some mission to go on.
But this has to all happen at a subconscious level, because I don't think he's the type of guy that would just be like, you know, fuck it, I'll follow this fat schlob around and kill folk to get in our way.
Sure. Well, I mean, once Eugene made that first battery... Abraham was hooked.
Right.
It's like, oh, he's obviously a scientist. So I don't know. Maybe like, there's some.
He pulled some like Wizard of Oz type shit with you know, fireworks and pyrotechnics, and Abraham thinks he's like a Amazon tribe that's never seen technology, just completely bamboozled by a flashlight.
Okay, I guess. I don't know.
Eugene's got him under his spell.
Mm. He has everyone under his spell
Mr.
this episode.
Wizard level spell.
Which we're going to call bullshit on later, but we'll get there. So Glenn's group finds a Terminus sign that has been modified by Maggie, and Glenn just immediately goes full Forrest Gump and takes off sprinting down the tracks with 50 pounds of gear on his back full riot gear.
He does.
What does he think he's doing?
That sign said Maggie.
What does he think he's doing here, man?
Every time
here,
they
man?
Find
he's
a new minivan, he names it Maggie. Maggie 1, Maggie 2, Maggie 3.
Okay.
I don't know, man. That I don't. I find
why is the show? Why did the show do that? Like,
and I'm not an unromantic person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm really motivated by like tales of like revenge and tales of people going to the utmost for their loved ones.
Yeah,
but I found the behavior of him to be inexplicable,
mm-hmm.
bordering on suicidal. Like I question
throughout
whether
the entire
he did want to see Maggie, you know?
Yeah.
Because the man sure as shit didn't act like it at times.
Yeah. I understand, I guess, why the show did this, because they wanted us to feel like he felt the urgency. And how else do you do that? I mean, I think there are other ways to do it than having him just sprint when he sees the first sign.
Yeah. Like, you know, having him be belligerent about them stopping, mm-hmm. that's an appropriate,
sure.
you know. But just him taking off in full riot gear, leaving everyone behind at a sprint, like, does he think he can really fucking sprint to Terminus?
I don't know. It doesn't look like it's that close. And it's obviously at least a day or more away walking.
If Glenn was a fucking Kenyan, he couldn't split to Terminus.
Yeah.
Like, you just can't do it, man.
Yeah.
I know. So I don't understand.
He's certainly not thinking rationally at any point in this episode.
No. And that doesn't strike me as the Glenn that we've come to know and
think
love.
Of season one Glenn.
Yeah.
Glenn is the guy who got Rick out of the sticky situation in Atlanta using his intelligence and his ability to figure out the situation on the fly.
Like, tactical awareness and strategic awareness.
Yeah. Now he's just some lovesick idiot.
He's a Maggie's. He's Forrest Gump.
He really is. It's shocking the step back that his character has taken in terms of just awareness. So then Walker wakes up Joe and his gang, and Daryl's kind of gone.
On the plus
doing
side,
his
he,
own stuff.
He reinvented the "Have a Nice Day" T-shirt. Mankind had lost that
Glenn
technology,
did?
And Glenn.
All right,
his
yeah,
epic
yeah.
Run.
Sure, he gets mud all over himself.
Yeah,
yeah.
So as he grabs.
Except this time, it's
yeah.
"Have a Nice Day" riot gear. The printing on the T-shirt didn't occur to him. This face scrape in this scene is
epic,
historic.
Really great.
It's fantastic,
right?
Because
when Greg Nicotero directs a fucking episode, the zombie details are choice.
Yeah.
And between this and the skeletal zombie with light shining through it, don't know how it's biologically possible. It was cool.
Sure.
There's a lot of good zombie porn in this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Not much to go on there. They think Daryl has gone off, but his stuff's still there. So
they debate the merits of Daryl's sack.
Yeah, they do. Then Michonne and Carl have this bet while they're walking down the tracks who can balance on the rails the longest. Carl wins a candy bar.
Yeah, you never bet a Grimes when there's candy on the line. Never.
No? Okay.
Michonne should
have
known.
I mean, look at the look on Rick's face when he sees that candy bar.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah.
He's like, he's like, no, don't stop. I went. I want in. So everyone start over.
Yeah.
I can outlast both you fuckers.
I really like this scene a lot, actually. I think there have been a lot of nice little moments between Carl and Michonne building up to this. But this time, Rick really sees it. I think.
Yeah.
He sees a connection that's developing between them.
I like it, too. I all the time wonder what the hell they're doing long-term on this show, because these scenes point to almost a regression for Carl. in his ability to be, you know, the kind of guy that's going to survive the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, I guess if you want to see a badass Carl, he's not as badass anymore.
Whether you want to or not, I mean, that's the way you survive in this world. You don't do it by reverting back to being childish. So that's true. Like, it's good, and they have really good chemistry. But it's always undermined for me, just like, okay, what are they doing here? Because we just did some really dramatic heavy lifting, you know, back 6 episodes ago with Chandler Riggs, and it seems like that they want, you know, Michonne showed up and it's just like, we're just gonna, you know, we're gonna dial back his moodiness and bitchiness and the fact that he's just lost his sister and he's kind of lost faith in his dad and their relationship is taking a hit. We're just gonna dial that way back. And I don't know that that's smart from a long-term narrative take, but I don't know where Gimple's going with this.
Yeah. Is there no way to combine a character with some optimism like Beth has with a character who's just plain badass like Daryl? I mean, could we see a Carl who, you know, is happy when it's appropriate and joking and fun, but also a badass when he needs to be?
The thing is, if Beth had been, like, some of her optimistic and, like, giving Daryl lectures about not giving up, and that, if we had seen that, like, 4 or 5 episodes after her fucking suicide attempt, it would also feel like, what the fuck are they doing with this character? And I feel like, you know, Beth has, by putting her on the back burner and giving her a little bit and a little bit and a little bit, they've kind of brought her back on this arc.
Yeah.
Whereas Carl, they've brought up and down and up and down, and now they're bringing him back up. And I just like, okay, what am I? Is he a man? Is he a man full grown, as they'd say in Game of Thrones? Or is he, you know, are we supposed to cherish his innocence as a child and encourage that and try to, you know, are we back to putting him back in the farmer hat?
Well, I mean, he's the only child between 2 and 18 at this point, right? Because Lizzie and Mika are both gone. Judith and Beth are the only children left, and I wouldn't even call Beth a child anymore.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I find that kind of puzzling.
Okay. So Daryl's hunting, and Bowman, I don't know his actual name, tries to steal his kill. And Daryl, and then he's making fun of Daryl, and he's talking about Beth and like...
And Bowman is a fucking ninja.
Oh, sneaking up behind him on a pad of leaves?
He gets 6 feet behind Daryl, draws and shoots without him even being aware.
Joe does the same thing. This whole group is just a group of ninjas.
They really are. Like, not like the ninjas, like the comic book ninja magic version ninjas.
Like, they can just
appear. They're mystical.
Okay.
Yeah, like, they disappear in a little mini tornado of wood leaves and then just blow away. It's incredible.
Yeah, no, I noticed that, too. I mean, the entire ground is covered in dried autumn leaves.
Yeah.
And not a sound is made.
Again, there's a way you could have staged that shot to have it be believable and kind of badass. That wasn't it. That's kind of what I would describe the lazy way of doing it, which it seems like... When it comes time to do character entrances and blocking, you know, why take 2 or 3 scenes when you can just shove everybody in one fucking shot and be done with it?
Yeah. the same thing happens with Joe. He intervenes when Daryl's about to take out Bowman, and he teaches Daryl how to claim, and then he cuts the rabbit in half and gives each of them a half.
Thus his name, Joe Solomon.
Yes, yes. And he says, ass end is still an end. I would say...
The ass end.
Maybe I'm just an
end.
Ass man, but I would say the ass end is the preferable end, right?
I would think on almost any creature you could name, that especially a fucking rabbit, the hindquarters are going to be by far the best piece of it.
There'll be more meat on them,
and
for
I'm with you. I've eaten rabbit before, but I've not ever cleaned one. But I'm just saying, you know, it'd be like if you had a kangaroo carcass. Would you want his bottom half or his top half? I would just assume, not know anything about except for what they look, and you'd want the powerful jumping muscles. You know?
You would think so, yeah.
It's like frog, same fucking thing. You want his fucking head and forelegs? No, you want them back legs.
Yeah, it's like feet. Pigs. I want the feet, man.
You want the pig feet, right? Throw away the bacon, the back bacon, the tenderloin, the pork loin, all that shit. Just go for the feet.
Yeah, Daryl's just gonna eat the rabbit feet. That's all.
And the pig face.
Sure.
Yeah, pickled pig's face also. Ugh. Hard to pass up.
So Abraham then demands that his group takes a break. But in exchange for a few more hours of travel, Glenn surrenders his riot gear to Eugene in a colossally dumb move.
Oh, I had one more question about the last scene.
Yeah.
But when Joe said when Daryl says there ain't no rules, and Joe's like, there are rules and you know it. That's why I didn't kill you for that crossbow.
Hmm.
What rule is he invoking there?
The rule of not getting shot in the face with a crossbow bolt? I don't know.
But, I mean, it was the rule, like, you look like a badass, so we're going to invite you here. It's like, what? That's just a weird way to cite it.
Yeah, I don't know what he's talking about.
I think that's the exception to the rule, which in this seems like if we can take something from you, we will.
Yeah. I mean, what stopped him from claiming Daryl's crossbow? Just saying claimed. Sorry, that's how it goes.
I guess
Daryl hasn't claimed it officially, has he?
Yeah, I'm not sure how that works.
Okay. Anyway, so Glenn trades off his right.
Wait till
here.
They get to the Finders Keepers rule and those bizarre rule interactions. You need a fucking douchebag vigilante lawyer.
Oh man,
group.
What if they get to a situation where they find a car? Daryl calls shotgun. Somebody calls claimed.
Mm.
Supersedes. Which one supersedes it?
Right.
I don't know. In this group, I'd probably say claimed.
Mm. Claim trumps all.
I guess so. I really like the joke that Abraham makes in this scene, where he says something about nobody having more than a couple hours rest since he went all Casey Jones.
Yeah.
That was really funny. And there's a really cool zombie death here that I want to give Zombie Kill of the Week and just call it a suicide, because the walker just takes off after Tara and falls off this platform and just explodes.
Mm-hmm.
In zombie gore, and it was pretty awesome.
Self-kill?
Yeah, is that allowed? Zombie kill of the week?
It's your skit, man. It doesn't trip my bullshit sensor.
All right, then we're going with that. That's zombie kill of the week.
This also sets up an uncomfortable situation where the many plot point hinges on the fact that Tara is basically made of glass.
Her legs are the most fragile thing on the planet.
I feel like one of them's got to be 4 inches longer than the other, the way she just can't negotiate any kind of terrain.
Not at all.
Like, she sees this zombie coming towards her.
Well, she gets shoved out of the way.
But that's what
but
I'm saying.
Abraham
can do the trajectories in his head,
yeah.
Take steps towards her and shove her out of the way before she even has time to do anything but twist her goddamn ankle.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, man. And she's had twisted ankles
before. And she's
before.
Rolling around the ground like Peter Griffin is basically like, the whole time. It's just, it's funny, man. It's really funny.
It was. It definitely was. And that's not the worst of her leg woes in this episode either. So then Joe tries to convince Daryl to stay with the group while he kind of explains how the rules work and they're walking down the tracks. This is not where he finds the strawberry or the tomato or whatever it is, right? No. That's much later.
Yeah.
So he explains, you know, the three rules, which are basically claiming things, don't lie, and don't steal.
You know what's interesting? When he said, if you steal, you keel.
Yeah.
And I thought that was just him being folksy. Kind of like he, you know, the whole I give a left monkey's nut and I'll be donkey licked. And, you know, but I looked and I don't know. When I was watching it the second and third time, I always have closed caption on. And the closed caption said keel, K-E-E-L. What the did the closed caption just spell it phonetically? What the fuck?
I don't know. I don't know how to spell the word, honestly. What's the right way to spell keel, like, as in die, keel over?
Oh, if you steal, you keel, like you keel over?
Yeah, like they'll kill you, yeah.
See, I thought they meant if you steal something from someone, you have to kill them.
If you steal, you keel.
That's what I took, like
oh, okay. No, I didn't.
What I mean is, like, if they come across someone and they're taking something from them, you kill them.
Oh,
that if you don't, if you're not willing to, you know, so basically it's kind of like, don't leave anybody to report back or, but then when it said keel, okay. I don't know, because unless it's part of a phrase, keel over, it doesn't seem to.
I think that's what he meant, honestly. It's got to be, right?
I don't know.
You steal your keel.
You steal your keel.
Hmm. I can't help you on that one. Sorry. So Glenn and company arrive at the entrance to a tunnel on the train tracks. Glenn decides he's going to go through it, regardless of it being just a long, dark tunnel of reanimated corpses, as Abraham says.
It's a dark tunnel that's snarling.
Yeah, literally the tunnel is snarling. It's the craziest, dumbest thing you could do to go into this.
Like, if you were playing D&D and your DM describes this tunnel, you're basically asking for a total party kill if you go in there, because he's going to be like, okay, well, fuck you then.
Yeah. The ceiling caves in on you, and walkers attack.
Yeah, he's like, well, we can't go over it, which I'm like, okay, because of the rugged mountainous Georgian terrain. You can't make that happen.
There was a fucking mountain above this thing. Okay. Like, it goes all the way to the top of the shot. So maybe you can't go over, but can you go around?
You obviously can in quicker time than you can get through it.
Yes, you can.
And I don't know, man. Glenn having a lantern that he used to get through the prison.
He dropped that.
Right.
Yeah.
He was going to go without a light source.
Oh, yeah.
If Abraham didn't give him that fucking mag light, he'd have just been going creeping along in the dark.
Yeah, and it gets worse, too, because when he gets in the tunnel and he's trying to distract the zombies so they can get around, he leaves the light as a distraction.
It's
what
insane.
Is he
going
to do when he gets over the rubble?
You don't,
and you still have no light.
You don't go into any kind. I mean, as a rule of thumb, if you go into like a cave or I guess a post-apocalyptic tunnel, you're supposed to have three independent sources of light.
Yeah,
that all work on different mechanisms, because shit goes wrong and you can get lost and get yourself injured and hurt when you're bumbling around in the dark, not being able to see. That goes double when the tunnel's full of reanimated corpses. This is just an indefensible move by Glenn.
Everything about this tunnel scene is as dumb as it gets for Glenn.
And the fact that Tara goes in there with him tells me that she's damn near suicidal.
But we know why she does it, right?
Why?
Because she feels very, very bad about her part in Herschel's death.
That's what I'm saying. So she's suicidal at this point. Does she expect to get out of this
tunnel?
She
may very
well
be. I don't know. I don't think she could reasonably expect that, given the circumstances.
I'm betting she's like, well, wish you hadn't given away that riot armor, Glenn, right about now. Because we're not even getting a full day's march out of these assholes.
Yeah. Yeah, that was all of it. All of it is bad.
It's all bad, Glenn. It's all bad. It's bad shit.
There's also a scene where Glenn tells Abraham that he's sorry for punching him in the face, and he's like, oh, don't be. I like to fight. That I think, is a key component of Abraham, just to his core. Like, who he is, he likes the mission, he likes to fight.
He's a warrior.
Yeah, he really is. And that may aid them later on. I don't know. Or it may be a hindrance to their goals. We'll see.
I'm mildly interested in your take there, Jim. What do you think about the line about, and Tara just wants you to know that you are seriously hot? And she's like, well, I like girls. And he's like, I was well aware of that.
Yeah. Double birds to him. He is not aware of that. In no world is he aware of that.
See, I took it as he kind of got that and he just found that even hotter. Like, he's that kind of dude.
That's even worse.
He's like, I know you're a lesbian.
Oh, I didn't think Eugene could get any creepier.
No, he just did it.
Oh, God.
He just did it.
All right.
The only way you get creepier from this point is if he went back in time, got an ice cream truck, and trolled neighborhoods for kids.
Sure.
I think that's the only way he could go down from here.
But then his hairdo might be era appropriate, and that would make him less creepy.
Mm-mm.
No, you think the mullet has never been...
Eat nothing creepier than a guy who looks like Eugene driving an ice cream truck.
That's true.
As a guy who used to live in a neighborhood that had an ice cream man that looked a little bit like Eugene, I'm telling you, ain't nothing creepier.
He has no facial hair, though. What if he grew out a mustache?
Like the stereotypically pedo mustache?
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah,
sure.
Okay. That, too, would increase his creepiest level.
Perfect.
Creepiness level.
So then Tara and Glenn are making their way through the tunnel, and Tara apologizes for being part of the prison raid.
They're having a heart-to-heart. They're talking. They're ringing.
They're walking into the mouth of hell.
And they're ringing a dinner bell.
Yeah. It's silly. It really is.
It really is, yeah.
I think in this scene, we find out that Lily, her sister,
is dead,
was eaten by walkers immediately after killing the governor.
Just pounced on him.
Totally surrounded. We don't see any of that on screen, but she fires off that gun.
Question how she saw any of that, because she was inside the prison when Lily died, and when the governor died, for that matter.
Hiding behind a tank.
And then later locked herself in a cage.
Yeah.
So unless she's, giving color commentary for Glenn, and they walked past, and she surmised all this stuff. But no, I was kind of curious about all this character development and stuff happening as well.
Yeah, yeah. But I guess that was her fate. Whatever. Joe's group finds an auto shop, and they post up, and everyone claims the good spots. So Daryl sleeps on the concrete floor. Not a problem. Daryl can sleep anywhere.
Plus, I just felt like this was a reenactment of the seat taken scene from Forrest Gump. In fact, this whole episode might very well be an homage.
It could be.
Because every time Daryl, puts his lonely eyes on a car, people are like, claimed, seat taken. And he's just, Vince just crawls and curls up on the floor. And I'm like, this is a total Forrest Gump moment.
Then Glenn and Tara reach a section of caved-in tunnel, and they find a mountain of walkers behind the rubble. Glenn decides they're going to push through anyway, regardless of what Abraham had just told him at the entrance, that if you run into anything troublesome, come back our way. We'll be looking for a car. Double back.
Yeah.
Get in the car with us.
And
Glenn decides it is faster to go through a horde of walkers and less dangerous.
And it's not like there's room to run. You're in a fucking tunnel.
Yep.
It's insane. It's indefensible. When they showed that, and they just showed the sheer amount of walkers, the fact that he still decides the best way to get to Maggie is through this is psychotic.
Yeah. And that's why I'm giving Idiot Survivor of the Week this week to Glenn. He's clearly the dumbest person in this group right now.
I mean, he's been involved in some horseshit hairbrain things. The well.
Oh, God.
Using
the
him
well.
As bait.
Yeah.
But at least he was the whole time protesting. He was just too big of a of a wimp to put a stop to it.
Yeah.
And none of the adults on the farm were around there to be like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
So it just kind of happened. But Jesus, I just can't. I can't defend it.
There's no defense for this. I mean, the idea that he is so obsessed with seeing Maggie has to put himself in harm's way.
If anyone
is
would
just
say,
plain dumb.
I could see myself doing that. That's fine. That's very romantic. But you would not have survived 2 years of the zombie apocalypse with that kind of head on your shoulders. You just wouldn't.
That's true. I mean, he hasn't had, I guess, that head on his shoulders very long, right? Just since Maggie's been gone. So a few days, maybe.
I guess.
So he's been lucky not to die already. He gets super lucky in this episode.
That's why I'm saying, your life is precious. You want to get to your girlfriend, okay? But just because you saw what you think is wet blood back there on her message doesn't mean that she conclusively... I mean, she could have seen all this and been like, fuck this shit, I'm going around.
Yeah.
And then, you're risking your life unnecessarily.
Yeah. Yeah, he says that Maggie made it through the tunnel. I can make it through. How does he know that?
Yes.
How do you know that?
Very valid question.
And I mean, it's very obvious that he's looking at these walkers buried in this rubble, which was fucking awesome, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that set piece is just incredible. The walkers just reaching out from this wall to try and eat you is a horrifying sight.
And again, the zombie that was like more space than body.
Yeah.
You could see the light shining right through it.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool touches, but it felt like they just had in mind this zombie set piece, and then come hell or high water, or no matter how bad it makes our characters look, we're fucking filming this shit.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been cool if they had turned back, realized, okay, this is too crazy.
Right.
We didn't realize how bad this would be.
Or if Tara had been, maybe she could start earning her keep by being the voice of reason. Glenn, I know you want to get back to Maggie, but this is not the way.
Yeah.
If you get bit, you will not get back to Maggie.
Yeah, if Rick had been there, none of this shit would have happened, right? He wouldn't have let them go in there.
I just feel like that they missed if Tara really felt like she owed Glenn, she should have put more than just a half-ass, I can't believe you're thinking of doing this.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, you saved me. Like, she could have pulled that guilt trip. You fucking saved me and went to all that trouble, and now you're going to kill us both.
Yeah. Now let me save you, because you're about to make a huge mistake.
Yes. I want you to get back to Maggie as much as I feel like an obligation by telling you, as an objective third party, you're being a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
That would have been a really cool character moment for her.
Sure.
And they still could have had the fucking zombie set piece, because the resolution of it was basically Tara's made of porcelain and Deus Ex Maggie comes flying in.
That was the real problem I had with it, is that it, she just came out of nowhere. I mean, I understand like the timeline can line up. I get it. And the way it was filmed, it looked like, so the way this whole thing is set up, it looks like Maggie and company went into this tunnel.
Yep.
There were too many walkers in front of them. They brought the ceiling down to block the walkers and then went out the tunnel and around.
No, I thought they...
No, because they show up from like a side angle, like further down the tracks, right?
They show up on the other side of the tunnel.
But how could they get through a giant horde of walkers in that tunnel?
I don't think they did. I think that the walkers were all around them. They brought the tunnel down and then the confusion ran.
And got past all those walkers?
I think
that's... Because like you said in the instant cast, they're on the wrong side if Maggie and company made it through.
Oh,
that to
okay.
me says
all right,
they brought down the ceiling. It blocked the path of the walkers, and they had to go back around.
Okay. Well, okay. So...
So that would give Glenn and his group time to actually catch up,
right.
Which I think the timelines then line up a little bit better.
Right. So that's kind of confusing that they just went in their guns blazing, because they very easily could have killed Glenn and Tara. From ricochets alone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And with Eugene, with a gun in his hand.
Oh, was he shooting, too?
I think he was, yeah.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
Maybe I thought he was.
Abraham gives him a gun at this point.
After the truck incident.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how many times are you going to take your life in your own hands, man? Wow.
So then Abraham and company find a van that works along the road, and they decide they're going to take it.
I got to say, I love the stunt women and men on this show are to be commended, because they fucking commit.
Oh, yeah.
Abraham grabs a real living woman by her, like, thigh and tit and flings her out of this goddamn minivan, mm-hmm. and she just is total ragdolls.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they had like some kind of cement textured padding or whatever, but it was still just like unbelievable.
Yeah. No, I really love the stunt work in this. And we talked about the walker who landed on his head a couple episodes ago.
And the waterfall of walkers that came out in that one like 12 miles out episode.
Uh-huh.
It's just they really do commit to being a brainless zombie and put their bodies on the line for it. It's remarkable.
For sure. There's a whole lot of other stupid stuff here with Eugene that I can't really remember.
And did you find it vaguely sexist and racist?
The second time through, no, I didn't.
Like, if he said that to you, Abraham, I wouldn't have thought so. But when he's saying that to...
Talking about the son of the South.
When he's saying it to an ethnic woman, and he's like, I would hate to see you be the chosen navigator over a son of the South who's been through travails both real and virtual.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, I don't think he's necessarily... Well, I know he's a misogynist.
Okay, yes, sure.
Okay, whether it's an act or not, it's open question. But his view on women is pretty Neanderthal. But again, as on, you know, he's speaking to a Latina as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, maybe that's what they were going for. I just didn't get it the second time through. I don't know.
Or maybe he's just maybe just plain ignorant. I don't know. But I got that kind of like, whew, I thought Rosita?
It's Rosita.
I thought Rosita was really going to go off, and she just kind of basically rolled her eyes at him.
Well, I thought it's because his Son of the South stuff felt to me more like I'm used to the countryside. Like, I'm just from this area.
He's from Central Texas.
Is he?
They
How do you
said,
know that?
Didn't they say that we I successfully navigated us from Houston to here?
Sure, they said that, yeah.
So I'm guessing that he started in Texas.
He may have, yeah. And that's a long way to go, so he probably
And I'm
did.
Saying, like, the country in Texas is nothing like the country in Georgia.
No, that's absolutely true. Yeah, I didn't realize he was from Texas. So maybe you're right. Maybe he is a little racist. That's not cool, Eugene.
Anyway.
That's another reason for me to hate him.
Again, vague. There's no hard evidence here. I'm just saying
sure.
I got a whiff.
All right.
A whiff of...
Either way, he could use a cinder block on the head. That's all I'm saying.
Maybe that's his problem. He took her one or two of those. He did take it. Okay. Yeah.
So then Glenn leaves.
He was Stephen fucking Hawking until the cinder block incident.
He was a scientist. So Glenn leaves the only light source they have in the tunnel as the decoy while he and Tara try to sneak by the walkers. Unfortunately, Tara's glass legs get caught in the rubble and the walkers close in. Yeah. Once again, Glenn, idiot survivor of the week. I don't know. I mean, I can't really blame Tara in this scene because her leg was already hurt. So climbing across a stack of a pile of loosely stacked rocks, it's not the best thing to do when you could barely walk in the first place.
Right.
So but I don't give her too much guff, but
Glenn's all honey badger didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. You said you were good, right?
All right.
You're good to scrabble over this poor footing, heavy ass shifting rubble, right? That also has just random walkers sticking out of it.
Uh-huh.
You said you were good. Thought you were cool, Tara. I mean, he's applying it just solely as like he's got the peer pressure of one. That's the only way she continues to follow him.
Yeah, no, it's her conscience. I mean, she feels guilty.
She's
about
got
it.
A weird way of displaying it. Like, you know, I don't count loyalty as being just like whatever you say, man.
Yeah, sure, yeah. So Eugene navigates Rosita to the tracks on the other end of the tunnel, and they see something shocking that we don't get to see. Hence the lack of buildup to the reuniting here in a minute.
Yeah, and also we found something else. Abraham is not a light sleeper.
No, he's not.
Until you put a seat back onto his mm-hmm. head, he's going to sleep through in a zombie apocalypse, no less. Cars stopping.
That's the thing.
Heated arguments.
I wake up when a car slows down. Like, if I'm on the freeway and I'm sleeping, well, and I'm not driving.
Yeah, right.
Once the car hits an exit ramp.
This is the Midwest. You can actually go like 30, 40 miles asleep before you hit a rumble strip and wake up. So,
but when you get off on the exit ramp, I wake up.
Yeah.
Like, you slow to 40, I wake up.
Or if you get to a section that's like, you know, kind of unusually rough.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm just that way. I would think that a guy like Abraham would be even more so.
In this scenario, yeah. Anyway, Bowman accuses, I'm calling him Bowman now, even though that was Shumpert's last name, I think.
So what do you think about, we gotta focus on Eugene as the hero. After I saved the world, I still have to live with myself.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Very noble.
Again, that is fucking hilarious, especially the way he delivered it.
Uh-huh.
I'm all in on Eugene.
Okay.
Eugene's fucking awesome.
He annoys the piss out of me, but yeah, he's funny.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm all behind Eugene at this point.
All right. We go back to Bowman and Daryl, and Bowman has accused him of stealing his half of the rabbit. Joe finds it in his bag, but he knows the Bowman is lying, and he has the guys kick the shit out of him.
Funny enough that the guys didn't question him at all.
No, they didn't.
It's just like, I'm not even going to look in his bag, beat the shit out of him. Yeah. Several people noted to us that Lim, who is the Bowman, is mm-hmm. the same guy that did not respect Bandana's claimed rights on the bed.
Yes, that's true.
And there's like a debarrassed split second scene, you know, when Rick is, I think, running out of the house where you kind of see him get up from the bed.
Yeah.
So the thought being that he's a repeat offender.
Mm-hmm.
And at any rate, lying is even worse than not respecting claimed rights. Like, that's the one rule that this group seems to hold sacred.
Sure.
But did you question at any point why this group is letting Joe follow them? Like, why is he...
He's the oldest,
kind of beer guttiest one of them.
Okay.
But he's calling all the shots. Where they stop.
Yeah.
Who gets rule enforcement. Who gets a beating unto death.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff. What... are we going to see him just be a complete badass at some point?
I don't know.
Because his whole redneck philosopher king, mm-hmm. I don't think would carry the day in this group. I really don't.
Okay. I could see your point there, sure. I mean, in the end, every group is going to have a leader. Like, a leader will emerge in any group.
But there's always a reason
I don't know what makes him the guy that they want to follow.
Yeah.
Or that they're at least willing to follow.
That they're either willing or scared or through fear and intimidation.
I just don't think we've seen it yet. And we might. I hope we do. Because if not, yeah, you're right. That doesn't make
sense. If anything, he comes across as kind of like kindly.
Almost.
Like he's bending over backwards to give Daryl the most gentle introduction in his group possible.
It feels like he's just trying to indoctrinate him and bring him into the group, and then Daryl will start to see the real side, the real colors of this group.
Sure, sure.
I mean, he doesn't want to scare Daryl off with talks of rape immediately. I mean, let's talk about that, because there are a whole bunch of people on Reddit who are talking like, these guys aren't so bad, I don't know why everybody thinks they're horrible people.
They're terrible, yeah.
For one, they're choking each other out over a bed.
Right.
That's fucked up. Right. For two, do you remember in that house, when they found Michonne's clothing, they immediately just started talking about raping her?
Did they use the word claimed?
On her clothes?
Yes.
Like, who claimed her blouse? I don't know.
Right.
It's probably Joe.
No, I just want to know, is like, did someone claim... It sounds like I'm making a joke, but I'm not. I was wondering, because they used the word claimed on the bed.
Yeah, they did.
And if they were openly discussing, you know, raping Michonne, which they were, I wondered if they didn't use, like, well, I claimed that if it happened. And the thing
I
read some of that back and forth, and someone's like, well, that was just a few people. But no one fucking debate, you know, no one is like, that's sick. That's out of line, man.
Yeah.
We don't fucking rape people in this group.
Although I'm fairly certain that there was some kind of noise disruption in that house because nobody could hear anything happening. So maybe the people talking about rape were in one room. Joe was in another room. He just didn't hear it.
He was bouncing his tennis ball on the porch.
Yeah, maybe. But my point is, these are terrible guys.
No,
and they've told us and they've shown us that these are horrible guys. Don't think that these guys are nice.
Yeah.
In any way.
And I don't think Daryl thinks that at all.
I don't think so either. No.
In fact, he's thinking, like, I wonder if Rick had been here. You know, he's just basically, I think, comparing these guys unfavorably to his crew at the prison the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it's cool later on when they tell the story of, you know, Rick in the house. I really like how Daryl doesn't understand that that's Rick.
Right.
Because he didn't see that.
Right.
But we do as an audience.
Right.
And it was just really cool. Yeah, but we'll get there. Anyway, the villain from Unbreakable tells Glenn to go on without her. And Glenn refuses, and they are then saved by Maggie and Abraham's group.
I thought for a split second he was going to leave her. And I was about to sit up and take notice and be like, well, okay, this is actually, they're committing to Glenn just being fucking psychotic about getting back to Maggie.
Yeah.
And that would have been... Again, I always take shit for this, but that had been a very interesting choice.
Well, that's the thing. Like, he's been making those choices throughout the episode. So why not make one more?
This is the point where he's like, I want to get back to Maggie so bad I put us in this situation. I clearly don't have enough ammo to fight our way out. Oh, well, I'm just going to Alamo it up here and, you know, die with Maggie's name on my lips.
That's silly.
Glenn's got the biggest white hat on, I guess, at this stage.
He
literally is almost a saint.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he refuses to leave Tara at the prison. He refuses to leave Tara in the Walker hellhole.
But
I don't like the
reason they're both not dead is because of Maggie's last-minute intervention here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it comes out of nowhere. That's the problem I had with it.
Yeah, like I said, it's Deus Ex Maggie.
Yeah.
It's the literal light at the end of the tunnel, and this time it's a minivan toting a bunch of badasses with guns.
Sure, and one idiot with riot gear.
Yeah.
So Glenn then lies to Maggie about how he met Tara, which I don't like. Eugene decides that they're going to go to Terminus instead of DC. You didn't seem to have much of a problem with Glenn's lying to Maggie here about how he met Tara.
No, I totally think that's the one thing in this fucking episode that I think is relatively in his character. And when I rewatched it, I thought it also, you know, it's kind of like wasn't his tale to tell. Like, hey, this is Tara. She was attacking Woodbury. She was in the group that killed your father. Like, And maybe that there, like, there was a significant look between him and Tara. Like, maybe, hey, I'm gonna play this cool because I know that one, you know, when you're ready, you'll do the right thing.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I wonder how it's gonna shake out when Maggie finally finds out about it.
Right.
I mean, it does set up some interesting tension within the group.
Because
the same thing that was happening with Carol and Tyrese, right?
Right. Yeah, and I feel like there was when I was watching the Tara, I thought Tara was a goner. I didn't see her making it out of the season.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, I thought maybe she was going to pull Glenn's gun out of his holster and shoot herself. So yeah. Then that way Glenn could keep the high road, but
also get Maggie.
Then her arc would kind of like, you know, that was her job.
Her atonement.
Yeah, and she sacrificed herself. Kind of Otis-like, only it was a self-sacrifice rather than
Shane comes out of the hole in the ceiling of the tunnel.
That's right. Let me show you how it's done, Glenn. But I thought that would have been like, okay, well, maybe they're going to do that. I did not see her surviving, and I feel like she's going to make it in the next season.
I think she is.
As a main character.
There's also talk of her and Sasha and Bob going to D.C. once they get to Terminus. Because that was... In this scene, that's Eugene's plan. Like, okay, we're clearly near Terminus. We should go there, supply up, and then head to DC. Might help us out. And Sasha's like, yeah, I'm going to go with him. Tara says, I'm going to go with him. Bob's like, I'm going with wherever Sasha's going.
Right.
So, yeah, she might exit next season early on.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know. It seems like the character of Abraham is too interesting from the little bits I've gotten about him to let him go yet.
Although so, his idea of packing all eight people into a minivan and heading to DC is right up there with Glenn's decision to fucking go into a snarling tunnel as far as bad ideas in history.
Why? What's wrong with eight people in a minivan for 1,000 miles?
I wouldn't want to be with six people, grown ass adults in a minivan, let alone eight.
Sure,
Holy shit.
Stuff a couple in the
Oh, and by the way, the whole thing smells like rotted soccer mom.
Well, that was
no,
just Eugene.
Thank you.
That was just Eugene.
Eugene just smells like boiled cabbage.
He might. I don't know. So then Maggie and Glenn catch up, and Maggie burns the picture with, while she promises never to die. Like,
she's like reading out of the overly attached girlfriend's manifesto.
Uh-huh.
You won't need this picture before because I'll never leave your side.
Yeah, it's A, it's creepy, and B, it's something she can't possibly promise him.
No, I thought it was...
Look what happened at the prison.
If I was Glenn, I'd have been like, ha ha ha, as I grabbed the snatch from her tamper out. It's like, uh-huh. I tamped it out.
Yeah.
Rubbed one out. Bizarre behavior by Maggie. Like, despite our recent evidence, we're never going to be separated again. Never.
Yeah, it's...
You'll never need this as a memento.
It seems like they were just going for sentiment in this scene and just disregarded the realities of the situation they were just in.
Yeah, but this isn't...
They shouldn't have. I'm not arguing that was the right decision.
I find it silly and immature when people do this in our world where you can make reasonably certain guarantees of stuff like that.
Yeah.
People don't live up to them, but you can make those guarantees and probably nothing external like a disaster or a kidnapping or a house fire or whatever is going to separate you.
Yeah.
But I just felt... I don't know. If I was Glenn, I'd be very disquieted by that moment with her.
Sure. Makes sense. Then Daryl wakes up and he heads out with Joe's group and he sees Bowman's discarded corpse.
Do you know how many supplies they could trade Maggie's photograph for?
Oh, God.
I mean, this is basically a prison economy, right? She's an attractive girl.
Yeah.
They could get a couple of cartons of cigarettes, you know, cases of canned peas. Couple rounds of ammunition. Are you feeling me on this?
Yeah. I don't know why in the zombie apocalypse you would smoke. For God's sake, don't smoke in the zombie apocalypse.
I would smoke in the zombie apocalypse. I would engage in every vice known to fucking man, because why not?
Because you're going to be dead if you do that.
I'm not.
You're going to stay constantly drunk, smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. You're not going to be able to run from zombies.
I don't need to run from zombies. A fast shamble, which I can manage.
Drunk
and high smoking. And, yes. Okay. Yes. I'm not living to 75 in this world. I'm not leaving a good looking corpse. I'm probably going to die screaming. So yes, yes, you got it. I will put it in my body.
Okay. Oh boy.
That crocodile shit that they got in Russia. Yeah, I'll shoot that up even. I don't give a shit.
So Daryl sees Bowman's discarded corpse with an arrow through his eye, and he almost covers him up with the sheet, but then decides against it, which I'm happy about.
Yeah,
because the guy didn't deserve it.
That would have really been. Yeah, I'm glad they played it just like that, where Daryl's like, "These guys are assholes. Fuck this guy."
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he essentially tried to get Daryl killed. So.
Yeah, for no good reason.
Yeah.
In fact, him claiming the rabbit was horseshit in beginning.
Yeah, it's just being an asshole.
Yes, there can be only one Bowman, apparently.
I guess so. So Joe gives Daryl a drink, and they find a Terminus sign. Joe thinks that Sanctuary for All is a lie, because he doesn't think people like him will be accepted in this place.
I think anyone can walk through those doors. But
it seems like it, even
I'm
walkers.
With Joe. If I was Joe, I would assume that anything that said sanctuary and community, I would not be welcome in.
Yeah, probably not.
Because I would try to take it over immediately.
Are you speaking as...
I'm speaking
you
as
Joe.
No,
okay.
I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not the warlord type.
Just clarifying for the audience.
Yeah, no. I think that Joe would be like, oh, this is a sweet place. We're going to start running it, Mary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. We'll take a plate, and we'll take all your plates.
All your plates, and we're probably going to lock the front gates if that's all right with you.
Yeah.
So he also tells Daryl in the scene what happened with Rick in the house, and we kind of find out that's why they're headed to Terminus, which, you know, they're stalking Rick, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the final scene, Glenn's group finds Terminus, and it's happy music time. A lot of sunflowers, a lot of plants, a lot of gardening, and... Happy Mary at the end of this. No locks on any of the gates. That's a bad sign. It can't be good there. Because if...
Didn't you hear the music? Be not so nervous, be not so frail, Jim.
Yeah. Well, I thought they were singing about Tara.
heal and rest your glass ankles. Yeah, I don't get it. This place... boggles my mind that it's not been overrun by zombies or assholes like Joe.
Yeah.
It seems like there's nothing stopping it. I mean, maybe we'll find out that there was like snipers in every fucking window. But yeah. This place looks like a less secure version of the prison. Mm-hmm. And we all know how that ended out.
For sure. So, Mary, at the end of this, let's talk a little bit about the paintings, because there's a lot of talk about this online. The paintings that were in the house that Michonne and Carl were in, kind of playing the game where they were finding things. Carl brings Michonne this painting that she unwraps, and it has a picture of a girl with her eye crossed out and her mouth crossed out and this braid coming down the side, her left shoulder. Lizzie has the same haircut. Mary has the same haircut.
I don't think it's the same.
I know for a fact that Mary's is. I watched it today.
It's not the same. They do have their hair worn on that side, but it's not the it's not the exact same haircut. Is that the exact...
If
that picture
okay.
looks like a young woman
I
with
agree.
A young woman's hairstyle, Mary is none of those things.
Sure. Well, okay, so there's also a woman in the house who has this braid coming down the side.
And it was also not like Mary's.
And was petrified or dead or whatever.
Right.
It is exactly like Mary's. Exactly like Mary's. It's framed exactly the same. It's hard to get a braid to come over the front of your shoulder, I would think, as opposed to the back of your shoulder. And to have it off to one side seems like a very strange thing to do for all of these characters, unless it means something.
To me, I thought that was all pointing, you know, especially with the rabbits and whatnot. I thought it was pretty open and shut last week with the email that was all... foreshadowing for Lizzie's story. Maybe it has a greater fulfillment. We're sounding almost scriptural here. Maybe it has a greater fulfillment in Mary, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how.
I mean,
I'm not saying I have the answer to that.
It wouldn't surprise me if things are off at Terminus. Mm-hmm. Because the situation is weird.
Yeah, it's very
it's very hard for me to understand how these people are living in this particular area with what we've seen so far of their defenses. And again, it might be more formidable than we imagine.
Yeah.
Because they do have that sign, like, lower your weapons. Maybe if they came in there with their weapons up, they would have been shot dead in that corridor of, you know, Prairie Home Companion bric-a-brac shit.
Yeah.
But, and maybe that'll be like that. That this is like, you know, one of those things where it's like a gentle face, but there's iron underneath. It's got a grip of iron, velvet glove, iron grip.
Okay.
My favorite sex toy, by the way. but yeah, I don't know. Who knows? I just don't think that the painting had anything to do with Mary. And that's my take.
All right. And I think you're crazy. So,
all right.
That's my take.
All right. Will not be the first nor last time.
That is it for the recap, man. Let's do some pimping and then get to the feedback.
We are part of Bald Move. Of course, you know about The Walking Dead. Did you know Game of Thrones is coming back?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have some preseason coverage starting next week. And then the week after that, it's the premiere. So stay tuned for that. A week after that, Mad Men hits on its final season. It's quote unquote final season. They've split. Yeah. And they're doing two seasons.
It's first half of its final season.
And they'll have a totally different number scheme for the season after that. So whatever, AMC, I see what you're doing there. Keep getting them checks.
Yeah. Well, now they want to get some awards for these people now that Breaking Bad is off the air.
A
couple of years of awards.
Agreed. It's just sad because I feel like at this point, people take Mad Men for granted.
A little bit, yeah.
Because it doesn't move the needle. Like, you have to watch the whole season to have your hair blown back. It's not like each episode is like a thrill ride. It's sure. Almost like the last two episodes, like, holy fuck, I just puts everything into context. It's a very slow burn, blah, blah, blah. Two of the best shows on television, and we're going to be covering them. We're super excited. If you'd like to support us, please do so. First and foremost, at our Subbable site at Subbable, SubbableSubbable.com/baldmove. It's a way for you to subscribe either one time or monthly to help us pay to produce this content. And you can also bank the money that you spend with us to save up progressively larger and cooler perks. If you haven't already, please check it out. We're actually going to get a proper like pitch video up.
Mm-hmm.
In the next couple weeks, to explain this a little bit better. But if you have a Google account or an Amazon account, you're 95% of the way through signing up, and you can subscribe for free. So please do check that out. You can also use our Amazon.baldmove.com affiliate link, and that works real simple too. Anything you buy on Amazon after you use that link, we get a tiny cut of it, and it helps out immensely. Last but not least, we appreciate ratings and reviews on iTunes. It's the single biggest thing you can do to help us grow our cast. So if nothing else, please do that. Share us on social media. We appreciate everything you guys do to support us. And it's literally what makes us cover the amount of cast that we do possible. And we are going to hopefully blow you guys away with the number of casts that we cover in 2014.
Definitely.
That's our goal.
Yeah.
Mind-blowing coverage.
I'm super excited about it.
That's it. Are we ready for feedback?
I'm ready.
Dawn K says, just listened to your instant cast and was thrilled to hear you mention my factoid about the lack of train tunnels in Georgia. I felt almost famous for a minute. I did a little checking, and there's actually only one working train tunnel in Georgia. It's in northern Georgia on the Tennessee border, 200 miles from where the characters would be. According to the maps we have seen in Terminus, it's the approximate location of Macon, which is Dawn's hometown. Central Georgia is essentially flat. There would be no reason for a tunnel. I've heard of artistic license, but I wish they'd make some effort to be realistic. Most locals, if you have a series set in any kind of locale, that's like their big gripe. Because it's like, you know what? This is supposed to be, like, for example, Justified. It's set in...
I was going to say, except for Justified, they've done a lot of really cool things with the coal in the mountains.
They have, but it's shot in L.A. And a lot of people, a lot of locals say that. It's like, you're supposed to be on the highway between Lexington and what is that bumfuck town that they're all
Harlan?
From? Harlan.
It's Harlan,
Harlan
County.
Yeah,
yeah.
We're supposed to be in, and that's not what that looks like. It's, you know, that stuff like that. And, you know, that was, again, that's a big local gripe.
Sure, yeah.
I don't think that the big problem with the tunnel sequence was that it's geographically not possible. There's plenty of problems to go around. That was just the
there are.
Yeah. But thanks for pointing that out to us. Sent in an email and said, wanted to let me know for my nut addiction that today, March 25th, is National Pecan Day.
Okay.
Pecan Day. So I'm going to roll over to Jungle Gyms after we're done and celebrate by getting like a pound of pecans and eating them all.
All right. Don't forget the pig's feet.
Hog jowls all the way. Pickled hog jowls.
Brian
Dubb says, love your comments about Eugene. I totally agree. I don't like him either, but I hope they use his brain power in a Sherlock Holmes sort of. Whoa.
Wait, you're giving him way more credit.
Let's stop so we can have some riotous laughter. Eugene Sherlock Holmes intelligence. Anyway, to overcome the inevitable sandbagging they're going to get in Terminus, we already saw a little bit of his brain with the decision not to go to Washington first and evaluating Glenn's group as allies. It will take some effort of smart writing, so with this show, I'm a bit doubtful they can pull it off. You're right to be skeptical there, Ryan.
Can I just say that I think this season has been more smartly written than any other season of The Walking Dead? I think the way that they've tied it together, the structure of it alone, has made it more intricate and interesting than any previous season.
Okay. I think you're maybe pandering a little bit, but I think you're also sincere. So
I'm not pandering, yes. Okay. I'm very sincere.
My take is it's very ambitious what they've been trying to do, and they've been trying at least to get characterizations and flesh out these characters, which has been neglected for years.
Oh, yeah.
So if I had – but – there's still just a ton of nonsense on the show, too.
That's and totally true.
The nonsense level has been just as high as it has been in years past. So I'm not willing to say that I think next year's going to be better because we don't have a new showrunner. We don't have there's no reason to think that, you know, unless they continue to if they start spending money for better directors and writers – mm-hmm. more experienced people that would, and maybe we'll see that in the lead up to next season.
Well, this last episode next week is supposed to be written by Angela Kang or Angela Chang Kang. I don't know her last name.
Well, it's directed by Michelle McLaren, unless
and
they
Scott
fucking
Gimple.
Change it on.
No, it's also directed by Michelle McLaren, which was huge in making Breaking Bad awesome.
Yeah. And Game of Thrones and lots of stuff she's done.
So I'm super excited about what we're going to see next episode. I think that Scott Gimple has brought a lot to this season as far as character development, like you were talking about, that we haven't seen in the past two seasons.
Yeah, and
just the way it's done has been handled much better.
Yeah, honestly, if Lizzie and Mika's storyline, which ended up having some glorious moments for Tyrese and Carol,
yeah,
those are probably my biggest gripes of the season.
Sure.
So I don't know, but they were huge, pretty huge gripes.
Yeah, episode 2, no one would argue that was good.
I continue to maintain that season 2B through season 3A is the finest 16-episode stretch of The Walking Dead yet. And nothing I've seen has changed my mind on that.
Okay. Well, I would have to go back and rewatch that stretch to compare it with season 4, because I think season 4,
and also
aside
season
from
4,
the governor plot.
Well,
and
those are three fucking episodes, buddy.
Three episodes, sure, but out of a 16-episode run.
And the Mika and Lizzie stuff we both hated.
But that was only like two episodes. So out of 16 episodes, 5 that we did not like, and then 11 that I thought were at least good and some excellent.
It might be. You might be right.
I think it's approaching. If they can really nail this season finale.
And I might have nostalgic goggles on for the end of season 2, because I think the finale, the last 2-episode stretch there, really made up for a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It did.
Because there was some shit in the first half of that season. But anyway, this is my favorite email of the week. Amanda D. I am a registered structural engineer. I'm licensed in the state of Texas. I have 9 years of design experience with concrete buildings, and I teach concrete design at the University of Houston. Okay. I am literally an expert on concrete structures. There is 0% chance that Maggie shot down the roof of the train tunnel. Zero. It's fucking goddamn impossible. And here's why. Reinforced concrete came into use in 1853. Google says railroads started around 1830. Odds are this tunnel would have steel rods called rebar continuously crisscross through this concrete for structural or fluctural capacity, which I think is how Doc Brown traveled back in time.
It is.
He had the fluxural capacitor. Mm-hmm. We use rebar to prevent sudden failures. The material properties of rebar are such that sudden failure is literally impossible. I know nothing about the impact strength of bullets, so let's say, for argument, that Maggie had enough ammunition to break through to 3,000 PSI strength of the concrete, which at a bare fucking minimum is 12 inches thick. I'll help you out there, Amanda. She would not be shooting through 12 inches of concrete. Period.
I've been to the gun range, and they use less than that in the gun range to stop bullets.
Well, they usually have a big fucking steel plate at the end of that,
too. That's
true. But
yeah.
Anyway, if that's the case, then only a small section would fail or fall because a steel rebar would hold the rest up. Redundancy like that is always built into the system. But let's say this is an unreinforced concrete tunnel. It's still 12 inches thick of concrete in an arch, and I would feel comfortable standing under it while Maggie shot at it. I believe 150 years of water damage is more likely to break the structure than bullets are, but you still wouldn't have a sudden collapse. I understand that everyone's in email. I understand that everyone's suspension of belief is different, and when you're professional, it's just like you and I when we see people doing hacking.
Yeah.
Or using computers of any kind in a television show, we're like, ha ha, LOL. Hmm. But I'm not an expert in concrete, and I was like, there's no fucking way. I would be terrified to be in any tunnel if I knew that some random jackass could empty a clip of small arms fire and bring the whole house down.
Yeah.
And, like, if she had a grenade launcher, if she had a grenade, if she had some kind of high explosives, I think Amanda's here saying that still wouldn't work.
Maybe so.
But I would, that would at least, like, okay, that makes sense. But she says she didn't have enough ammunition to fight her way out of a couple dozen walkers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she had the firepower necessary to bring down a tunnel.
Probably not. No.
But oh well.
Yeah.
At least we got the cool scene of Glenn being a complete dumbass.
So I will say, when they show the shot of the roof, the ceiling of this tunnel, it does not look like there's rebar anywhere up there. So it's the unreinforced kind. It's the 1830s.
This is
or whatever,
a 200-year-old tunnel from the Revolutionary War era.
Exactly. Exactly. This is one of those very few built then.
Yeah. It was just rare to go.
And it must have had water damage.
Must have. And like the millions of trains that have rumbled through there. It was just a ticking time bomb. It was ready to be condemned.
It was.
And then the zombies came and they didn't have time to board it up. That's what must have happened. Matt B. wonders, in this world, how does It's Classified end all question to Eugene about what he knows?
Thank you.
Did you get, though, that Glenn thinks this is a bunch of bullshit?
I didn't pick that up, no.
When he said, because when Glenn was like, oh, I bet he's told you about him being the, you know, and there was an implied, and you believe him to that?
Oh, there was?
I thought so.
Yeah, you might be right.
But Glenn had just spent 50 minutes being a fucking idiot, so it was hard for me to take him serious at that point.
Yeah, I just don't buy that no one questions this. I mean, maybe Abraham doesn't because he wants a mission to go on. But Rosita, but Glenn, Maggie,
and
Sasha,
and
Bob.
And Abraham have some kind of relationship. But yeah, Sasha, Bob, all those people. Like, I got the clear impression that Glenn didn't buy it.
Okay. Well, I mean, maybe if Glenn says that if Glenn vouches for him, then Sasha and Bob and Maggie go along.
He's not. I don't think he is. I think he's doing the opposite of vouching. I think he's unvouching.
I know that's what you think, but I didn't
He's
pick that up.
He's giving a vouchectomy.
I don't know. I didn't get that. I didn't get it.
Oh. Our old pal, Staffa.
All right.
Proprietor of the Out of Continues podcast. If you're a gamer, you should check him out. Says, Michonne has been doing a lot of bonding with Rick and Carl. Michonne has been spending a lot of time with Rick. Do you think they're eventually going to get the two of them together? As of right now, it doesn't look like the two of them are bonding directly, but Rick was really happy seeing her bond with his son. That's enough for Don Draper.
Sure.
If Rick Grimes was Don Draper, he would have proposed already.
He needs to take her to a hojo.
Yeah.
See what happens.
Yeah. I mean, just all she had to do is not freak out when a milkshake is spilled, and he's ready to propose. But Rick was really happy seeing her bond with his son, so maybe she's starting to become a mother figure for Carl, and that can open up a possibility for future relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I'm super comfortable with Michonne and Rick becoming an item.
Sure.
I also am super comfortable with them maintaining a respectful comrade-in-arms relationship.
Yeah.
I have no opinion on their relationship.
Yeah, I think it's too early to tell. I do like the bonding between Carl and Michonne, and I think Rick likes it, so maybe there is they're nudging him in that direction, but they're not forcing it.
Let me take your temperature on your shipping possibilities here. All Rick right. and Michonne.
I'm 50-50 on them.
Okay. Let's say Carol and Daryl.
Carol and Daryl, when they get back together. Carol's going to push for it. I think it's more likely to happen than not.
I think it's going to be interesting because assuming that Daryl gets back with Beth mm-hmm. and Daryl does have the hots for Beth because apparently he's vented his soul to these roughnecks that he has a woman that he's pining after because Lim knew all about that.
Oh,
shit.
See, I thought he just guessed.
No,
I thought he was just intuiting.
The way he couched that dialogue, I got the impression that Daryl had talked about that, which was kind of remarkable.
Okay.
Maybe you're right.
Maybe it's just because I saw Now You See Me today, and I thought he was doing a Woody Harrelson.
But I think Carol has kind of been content to, like, you know, can tease him and see that Daryl's just not interested in anybody. But I think it's going to be weird for her if he actually was interested in Beth.
Oh, yeah.
And lots of interesting.
Because Carol was kind of Beth's coach back in the prison a little bit, too, right? Mm-hmm. Wasn't she helping out with her knife skills? Was Beth in on that?
I thought she was trying to teach her some of the, you know, she was another backup medical person.
Okay.
Maybe. That's like an old season, late season 3 memory, maybe.
Yeah.
But, okay, so we got that. Daryl and Beth.
Before they get back to Carol, I think that's likely.
No, I'm saying, like, are you, like, for it, like, out of 1 to 10?
Oh, I'm less for it than I would be with Carol.
Bob and Sasha.
I'm for it.
Totally for that.
I'm for it. Bob's a good dude now.
And I love his act. I think they're both really compelling. And,
yeah, he's not an alcoholic anymore.
And they're also, they seem like an adult relationship. Like, you know, hey, this is too forward and too soon, but who knows when it'll happen again. And you didn't accept it. Okay, fine. There is no, like, guilt or anything. It's like two adults negotiating a relationship. I loved it.
Okay.
I think, is there any I'm missing?
And Carl Maggie. And Beth.
Carl and Beth, no. Sorry,
Glenn
Carl.
And Maggie. No, I'm totally against that.
I'm getting over it.
You're getting over it?
This early this season, I thought that they could not kill them. I now, after seeing their, like, sick, single-minded determination to get back together, I'm kind of rooting against them.
Oh, boy.
Does that make me a bad person?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, I'll take that. I probably am a bad person.
Yeah, Carl and Beth.
No, sorry, Carl. Okay. Daryl has thrown his non-existent hat into the ring, and he's actually beating your fucking real hat that's in the ring.
Yeah, yeah. He trumped your hat with no hat.
And you can't win. When your hat gets trumped by no hat, you're fucked. Yeah. Poncho beats hat 6 days out of the week and twice on Sunday. All right, let's move on. Allison from our own old hometown of Indianapolis said, one thing I wondered about was if the rabbit claimer, now referred to as RC, actually put the thumper's head half in Daryl's trash bag. Food safety note, how long can you roll around with a severed rabbit carcass and it still be edible if it's in a trash bag? A
few hours, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, it was for breakfast and he's still toting this thing. Way later in the day, I'm assuming.
Maybe you just cook it extra well.
Maybe.
And then chow down because it's the apocalypse.
Anyway, getting back to Allison, I'm thinking maybe, I mean, this is the guy who was debating whether he could cut away zombie bites from a fresh deer carcass. So his idea of food safety and our idea of food safety might be different. Anyway, Allison says, I'm thinking maybe King Solomon of the gray hair did it and blamed the RC because he knew the conflicts would continue between the two bowmen. Therefore, it would result in RC being beat down or beat out of the gang. Gray hair seems like he wants to cultivate the relationship with Daryl because he knows he's the best asset they have and RC is expendable. Your thoughts?
It's interesting, and I recall this being a fairly early email that we got, because now I know, after reading Reddit today, that theory is rolling around. Mm. I think people are talking about that.
Kudos, Allison.
So, yeah, you may have been the first one to have that. I want to say the writers are not that clever, because there's no evidence in there, necessarily. Like, everything they do spells out, Bowman put it in his bag. Joe saw it. I there's just no evidence to really support that, right? It's no, pure conjecture.
But Joe could bust this out at a later time to win an argument with Daryl. Or
yeah, I wouldn't say it's not true. I would just say there's nothing that compels me to think it is.
It's like, you know, it's like he's being, it's, it feels to me like he's being groomed for second in command.
Uh-huh.
Because maybe Joe doesn't even like everybody. And maybe Joe is not the raping,
sure,
you know, pillaging kind of guy. Well, like, he's not above taking shit from people and killing folk and hurting folk when he needs to.
Yeah.
But some of these guys are a little too much, and he senses that Daryl's got the kind of qualities that he would need to keep these other guys in line.
That could be true.
Do you feel me on that theory?
Yeah. No, I think Joe realizes that Bowman is a terrible person.
He's an asshole on every level. He's an asshole complete among assholes.
Because, and I think if Joe did this, or if Joe has any responsibility in any of this, it's probably to the degree that he thinks Bowman is an asshole and wants to get rid of him. I don't know that he put the rabbit in the bag, but he's seen him lie before, right? He lied about the bed thing.
Well, we don't know if,
well, we don't know it, if he lied about
sure
the bed,
shit,
but
if Bowman,
he didn't respect claimed in that instance. For
if
sure.
Bandana remembered Rick's face, he sure as shit will remember the fact that he didn't, you know,
yeah,
respect claim. Which
I kind
of wonder
it.
Why Lim didn't catch a beating. He didn't look physically beat.
Yeah. Well, maybe he lied about it, and Joe said, sorry, we can't determine because you're saying one thing, he's saying another. But then this would be a history of lying,
yeah,
on Lim's part.
Right, right.
And now maybe Joe sees that, and he decides, you know what,
take
him out.
Joe's keeping an extra eye, just thinking, yeah, like, oh, I see the situation could be. And the other thing is, in that scene, he gave him an out.
Yeah.
He said exactly what you did, and if
you didn't really lie or steal.
And act like some pussy fucking cop, did you?
Uh-huh.
Or that would have been, had a line read if it was on HBO. But, yeah, he gave him an out, and I do believe that Lim would still be amongst the living if he had just come clean at that. Got me, Joe. He got his ass beat.
Yeah, well, he didn't steal. He wouldn't have lied if he had told the truth there. That was the thing that really got him, is that final lie.
That's true. Yeah, you're right. It wasn't against the rules. He specifically said that, almost like, you're cool if you just, you know, tell me the truth.
Yeah.
All right. Michael H. says, Daryl's adventure was the most interesting part of the show. I can imagine bands of men like that wandering the countryside, taking advantage of strength in numbers while avoiding the confines and authority of a place like Woodbury. That's a hellacious thought, that these are basically the thugs of Woodbury that thought Woodbury was too uptight.
Oh, jeez.
Joe's homespun philosophy and code of claim worked for me. Daryl will part ways with them the first time the gang decides to gang rape or murder someone. Could Joe's gang be the ones behind the slaughter of the group that the governor saw back in the first half of the season? Daryl could set up his own gang of post-apocalyptic Klingons wandering the countryside, answerable to no one, enforcing their own discipline, but also eschewing the nastier behavior of Joe's group. Or Joe and Daryl could be those.
Mm-hmm. The problem I have with this whole system of claiming is exactly what Daryl does at the very end of this with the tomato or the strawberry, whatever he gets. Some dude can see something, be reaching for it. You say claimed, it's yours.
Well, he should have fucking claimed it.
But what I'm saying is that is going to inspire resentment throughout this group. It has to. There's no way it doesn't happen like that.
Yeah, it's not a meritocracy.
Not
sure.
At all. It's just the first guy to say claimed.
It's,
I would be
fucking grade school yard rules.
It is. And people are going to eventually get angry. This group is going to self-destruct.
Mm.
I don't see any other outcome for this, honestly.
Mm. All right. Graham H. says, after rewatching Klingon. Oh, by the way, while we're still talking about Klingon, we did confirm that was Denise Richards.
Yeah. Or, no, 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 not Denise Richards,
not Denise
who's
Richards,
in
sorry,
Wild Things,
Jesus, Denise,
and Starship Troopers.
Denise Crosby.
Yes.
Which is also in Wild Things and Star Trek, no. Pet Sematary and Star Trek.
Yeah.
Someone on Facebook posted, goddamn, I can't remember their
name.
And
Deep Impact. What a fucking horrible movie.
Huh. Okay, I never seen it.
God, I hate that movie. Okay.
Anyway, someone posted that Michael Dorn has signed on next season to replace her and become a wildly more popular character.
Okay.
Love it.
That'd be awesome.
And Worf would be the perfect person for this, because this basically is what he programmed the holodeck to be for fun.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
On a daily basis, he did this just to blow off steam.
Yeah, give him a batleth and unleash him on a horde.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
It's a horror show.
That's what this is.
Supposedly. It's been light on horror of late. Graham H. says, after rewatching Claim, I noticed the bandit who choked that Tony was, in fact, a bowman. We actually talked about this, so we'll just move on.
Okay.
VD says, it's killing my soul that a team so battle-tested, experienced, would just stroll in their entirety right up to and through the Willy Wonka-esque gates of Terminus. Neither Abraham, with all his presumed combat experience, Eugene with his analytical strategic mind. Hold on a second.
Oh, God.
Good one, VD. Or Sasha, who's been critical, if not pragmatic, up until this point, thought to do any kind of recon just a few meters away to see if Terminus was truly the safe haven it professed to be. I don't think that this is hindsight nitpicking on my part, although I've been thoroughly accused of it. Preach it, brother. Because Sasha especially should have had her bullshit antenna all the way up at the start. Maggie and Glenn were dragged to Woodbury kicking and screaming, so they never saw the glossy, promising veneer on the outside. But Sasha knew, and between the three of them, could have seen the importance of a more cautious plan of approach. That is an entirely on-point criticism of this episode, and I have no response to it.
Yeah,
other
Sasha
than,
being
did you
key.
Not hear the music saying to not be nervous, not be
frail.
Frail.
Not be fucking pale. I don't know.
Yeah. So, he killed it on that one. I don't know if you can say anything contrary to it. All right. Jim is not taking my offer to say something contrary. So, moving on to Jamie.
I don't
Dubb.
Want to.
During the episode on our first watch, it's obvious that the writers are using the tennis ball guy to try to get in Daryl's head about. I love how we've got like 8 emails and 8 different nicknames for this fucker.
Uh-huh. Yep.
To try to get in Daryl's head about joining his group permanently, and I even said to my husband, well, that might have worked had Daryl not been through everything he has been so far, but not now, and I dismissed it. The line about an outdoor cat thinking he's an indoor cat was really good, but Daryl had a family in Rick's group, and that's hard to give up. Yeah, like, fucking Joe, we didn't mention that in the recap proper, but fucking Joe thinking he can psychoanalyze our boy?
Yeah, that's a fool's errand.
Ah, Jesus. It's nothing sadder than an outdoor cat thinking he's an indoor cat. Why not both, man? But after seeing the whole episode and then the rewatch, I might have to reconsider. You've talked in past shows about Daryl shutting down and withdrawing after Governor, and Beth was good to help stop that, but now she's gone, and while I don't know if he'll stop looking for her, Tennis Ball had some other quieter moments that really did seem to be getting to Daryl. Telling him Terminus wouldn't really accept guys like them, and how in this group there are no illusions. They don't have to be friends. They just have to follow the rules. Daryl is a follower at heart, but more than that, Tennis Ball is spending quite a lot of time showing him the ropes. It's likely he's grooming Daryl for a second-in-command position. I'm on this mirror wavelength there, a space Daryl is really happy occupying. It's slightly ham-fisted, but still important scene where Daryl starts to cover up the dead guy who tried to frame him but then says, fuck it, and doesn't. Wasn't a show for the rest of the group or for Tennis Ball. That was all Daryl. They wouldn't have known either way. Having a family in Rick's group was good, but also led to the heartache he's feeling over losing them, so maybe no attachments will be better. Her email brings up a really solid point, other than the one she actually made. Is Daryl just giving up on Beth?
Yeah, I don't know. It felt like he kind of did when he hit that crossroads, the literal crossroads. Because he just falls to his knees, and next thing you know, this group finds him. And it looks like he's been, you know, just sitting there on his knees for a while. He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know where to go.
I don't know what to do if I was him in his place, but it does. I mean, maybe he's the counterpart to Glenn, where he's just completely rational. It's like, I tracked this far. It's a fool's errand to run after car, and now I'm at a crossroads, and I've got no tracks going either way.
Yeah.
So, fuck me, I guess.
Yeah, it really feels like he's not very concerned with finding Beth anymore. Or he would like to, but he doesn't know how to do that.
Three emails to go. Andrew P. says, our heroes seem to have the worst luck with the number of zombies they run into. I remember the governor and Merle said the prison was in the red zone, and it seems like they were trapped in that zone the whole time after the farm. I don't know if it's the geography or the wind direction or what, but they were on the zombie highway. Survivors at Terminus seem to have much better luck. That's a good point. The fact that there's pockets, hot pockets of zombies.
Zombie hot pockets?
That would be disgusting.
Yuck. They're just full of brains. Like sheep brains, goat brains.
Oh, see, you're saying hot pockets were zombies. I'm literally saying zombie hot pockets. They're hot pockets made from zombie parts.
Why would you do that?
why hot pockets in general, man?
I don't know. I mean, zombies got to eat, and if you can manufacture a product to keep the zombie hunger at bay.
There you go. You just throw them a couple brainy hot pockets.
Yeah, maybe we get some zombie rolls up in here, too. Little bite-sized pizza rolls.
Zombie fritters?
Yeah.
Brain fritters?
Sure.
All right. Andrew's theory is implausible and solid. It would explain why some areas really have the shit in the stick as far as zombies, and some areas seem to be completely lightly defended.
Sure.
Yet these are all within relatively easy walking distances of each other, too. So
that's true. Walkers tend to walk.
Walkers gotta walk.
And also the idea that with any amount of walkers in your zone, you would not seal the gates.
Mm-hmm.
That's the truly shocking part, if this is not something extra.
Although maybe they don't parade their juicy asses around in the yard like the fucking prison guys did. I don't know.
Maybe.
Ashley S. says, I don't know if you've already discussed this, but we'd assume that Eugene is on the autism spectrum. Maybe Asperger's. Asperger's. I'm no expert by any means on autism or Asperger's, but I'm beginning to figure that it's an assumption that we're supposed to make, or if the guy's just weird. I also can't tell if the writers want us to like him or hate him. I don't think the writers give a fuck. They're just throwing him out there and whatever. They're full on honey badger with Eugene. Do you think that he is being portrayed as an autistic person?
I don't know enough about autism or Asperger's to say.
Yeah.
Like that's
because that's something that's,
I don't know what
I know
what
it's
a
not
typical...
I know it's not a new thing, but I feel like that's something that people have actually been throwing around as a label in the last 15 years, because I guarantee fucking T, I went to school with dudes that you would say were autistic or Asperger's, but they were just thrown in the gin pop.
Okay.
And you know, they were just the you know, the kids that were off.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know that putting a label on it changes the fact that this guy has very little functioning social empathy.
He's completely socially inept. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know at what severity.
Yeah.
Like you would label it with a certain label.
So like
if we had a
book or a psychologist and he'd be like, yep, he definitely has Asperger's. Would that change how we feel about him?
Hmm. Okay. That's an interesting question.
Because that would then make him seem like,
less like a creepy asshole, and more like
he's not a garden variety dipshit.
Yeah.
He actually kind of can't help this, which I think that's true of most garden variety dipshits, or else they would stop being dipshits.
Yes. I think it would make him more sympathetic if we had some kind of official label to put on it.
It sure as shit didn't work for Sonya on the bridge. People straight up hated her, and they were like very forward with the fact that she has some kind of autism is on the autism spectrum.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but I think that was interesting that you would, even though it's the same character, you'd feel differently if he is officially diagnosed.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe so.
All right.
I'm not sure why, but I would.
That's cool. Mike W. says, with regards to the comments about Glenn lying to Maggie about being out of character or not out of character or whatever, I think the bottom line is Glenn wasn't lying for the sake of Maggie or what she would think about Tara. He was doing it for Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the theory I came around on. Tara's been so hung up and guilty about her association with one old one-eyed bride, and she couldn't let go of herself, or forgive herself for that. Simply, I think Glenn is suggesting that he found her on the road as him giving Tara the nod to say, it's okay, you're a good person, and you can move on. That doesn't have to be your past anymore.
Okay.
Something else.
I get it.
Glenn might feel guilty.
About taking Tara in?
Yes, into a fool's errand where they almost got themselves killed.
Oh, I thought you meant about saving Tara's life after the prison. He might feel guilty about saving this person who
the first time
contributed
she
to
went
Herschel's
in for a,
death.
The first time she went in for a bonding fist bump, he's like, oh, I've made a terrible mistake.
Yeah, yeah.
Toned that shit way down on that character, haven't they?
They did. They really did. And I feel like that's an evolution of the character itself. Yeah, I think it is. I think it's a strong... Because when we saw her fist bumping and like trying to pretend like she knew all about weapons, she was very naive. This world hadn't really gotten its grip on her yet, right? And now that she's seen some form of destruction and some horrific acts... She's not as concerned with fist bumping people or pretending like she knows everything.
I think is
she's come down to earth a little bit.
I have an alternate theory, which as the writers have actually made her an actual character, they don't need to give her a bunch of fucking tips.
Okay, yeah, yeah. When are they going to do that with Eugene?
Good. I mean, like I said, it would not surprise me, assuming Eugene survives, if he eventually became like a fan favorite. Because I already love the hell out of him.
God,
even if he never
I hate him. He's so annoying.
Yes, he is. But the stuff that he brings out in other people are hilarious.
Yeah.
He's completely socially unacceptable in a way that Merle was. But he's got this innocent Forrest Gump-like way about him that completely disarms people that should be like just pissing blood dealing with him.
Uh-huh. I don't know. I put myself in the situation with the characters, and I think, how would I react to this guy? And it would not be pleasant. I would not... I don't know that I'd be able to deal with him. I would part ways.
You'd be able to deal with him.
I would... He
you
would
and I
be
ran
gone.
Around the Orfmeister, man.
No. He was nothing like this guy. He wouldn't say completely inappropriate things.
Yeah, oh, he wouldn't? To our girlfriends?
He said inappropriate things, but he would not say them like he knew everything. Like,
that's the
thing, is the cockiness of this asshole.
The condescension and arrogance weren't there.
That's the problem I have with this guy.
Okay. Okay.
I couldn't deal with that.
All right. I'll buy on that. That's it.
Okay.
That's all we got. We got some spoiler shit to talk about, and then we'll be out.
Sounds good.
So, we got the spoilers. This is our feedback section. I'm a professional podcaster, and I'm roughly transitioning into this new segment.
That's really rough.
Yeah. If you'd like to send us an email for next week, you can do so at watchingdead@baldmove.com. You can follow us on our live threads on facebook.com/baldmove and over Twitter, Jim's Kernels of Wisdom.
They're kernels. It's only 140 characters, so.
Yeah. Jim Jones Gold is over there at Twitter @baldmove. Almost threw a .com on it. Having a hard time transitioning here. That's it.
Okay.
Save me, for Christ's sake.
All right, I will jump in here. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We're, of course, going to be back next week after the episode. For
the finale.
Yeah, season finale. The real season finale, not the half-season bullshit finale.
That's right.
Real season finale with an instant cast. And until then, I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron. See you next week.
We're back with the spoiler section.
Tyler P. says, I'm not too bothered about Carl being denied these really cool moments from the comic. He's talking about my disappointment in how they basically, Carol stole his moment with laying down the law in the juvenile justice department.
Okay.
I think something that tends to be forgotten is that before the prison fell in the comic, Carl didn't really do that much at all, besides killing Shane, not a small
which
thing.
Which is arguably, yeah.
And the occasional conversation with Sophia, he was very much a side character with little to no panel time. It's because of the development of the TV Carl that Comic Carl didn't have that I feel like he's already had his coming-of-age moment when he ultimately killed Lori in Season 3, something Comic Carl did not do, and thus him killing Lizzie wasn't needed. Of course, one can make the argument that the whole element of him doing what the adults can't from the comic version is also lost, which is true, but I still think we'll see something like this in the future.
Yeah, I certainly don't think this locks Carl into any pattern. that he has to be in.
But they are swinging back to kind of baby Carl.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I won't argue with that, for sure. Every time you say Comic Carl, I think you're going to say Comic Carnival.
Yeah.
Which is like a local, chain. It might be a regional chain here.
No, yeah. It's just local.
Okay.
They are shit for comic book stores in Cincinnati.
Yeah, they're terrible.
I had no idea how spoiled. I took my son to get like Mega Man and Sonic, was fucking horrified.
Uh-huh.
These are like fucking flop houses that have bare 2x4s nailed together holding shit. I mean, it's terrible.
Hmm.
It's terrible. And the one that's like in a decent place and has a decent client base are a bunch of pretentious assholes.
Mm.
It sucks. I miss Hometown Comics and Comic Carnival so bad. Anyway.
Can I jump in here with something real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
Because I got a small spoiler for next week. Something that we know isn't going to happen because of something that Robert Kirkman said in an AMA. One of the questions asked was, how are you planning to bring Negan? I guess he's called Negan.
Yes, it's Negan. Yeah. Not Negan.
Clarified in the AMA as well. To bring Negan into the TV series, would you censor him or try something else? And Robert Kirkman's response was, we've got time to figure that out. Scott Gimple is a genius, and I think we'll be able to make it work. So,
well,
that says...
Scott Gimple, a genius.
Hey, the important part. The important part is we've got time to figure that out, which means that Negan is not going to be in Terminus.
No.
And we obviously, I think we kind of know that because Terminus is likely to be cannibals anyway.
Right.
And the hunters, but that I think confirms it.
Tyler, I apologize for us bisecting your comment with our bullshit. But I'm going to keep the train rolling.
Okay.
People that think that Terminus is going to be wrapped up next week are out of their mind. There's no way they built.
Oh,
this,
no.
That we're going to be at Terminus for a long time, people. There's no way they built that set.
Hmm. Yeah.
And knowing AMC the way we do, that we're not going to get at least a half season, probably a full season out of it. Now, that fills my very black heart with despair,
mm-hmm.
because I literally don't know. That also blows a lot of the common theories about, well, it's going to be a trap, or it's going to be part of the Hunter plot line. It's going to be like, I can't see them all be truing unless AMC finally said, you know what? We got the fucking Amazing Spider-Man paying us to promote their shit. We got Hyundai filling us trunkfuls. We can spend some money and build a couple sets per season for the show that's getting just massive amounts of cash.
Yeah.
That would be... If Terminus does wrap up in like two or three episodes of next season, that is the one thing other than hiring better talent on the writing director side that would give me a lot of hope that this shit's going to turn around.
So I agree with that. They might want to spend more money. That'd be a good thing. I also wonder, Terminus is a real place. And I saw on Reddit a comparison of the real Terminus with the Terminus set that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And they're almost identical. I mean, the only thing that they've changed is it looks like they have made everything look a little bit newer, made everything look a little bit more overgrown, and put the Terminus signs in the window, obviously.
Mm.
I wonder if they're not using that actual area to shoot.
Well,
because that would be very cheap and very AMC-like.
Yep. And effective.
And if they were only going to stay there for an episode or two, that would work out well, right?
Sure.
Like, the Google Maps of that place look exactly like the set that we see on the screen.
Well, in that case, then that would be very smart.
But I don't know if they rebuilt it or if they're using the actual location.
If it looks a lot like that, I don't know why they wouldn't.
Yeah, that's true.
And that would also, like, I don't mind them being on the road either. I don't think that's been the problem of the series.
Oh, no.
And that seems like a very cheap way to shoot, too. You just pull a random section over the road, and you got a couple of shitty cars, and...
Yep, find a tunnel.
You have some camp scene, you know, you have some campfire scenes. That seems a cheap way to shoot, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's get back to Tyler's treatise on Carl here, shall we?
Nah, let's not. I want to talk. No, no, I'm kidding.
In the comic version, Carl is angry, but more than anything, it's just false bravado and that he's scared. Mm-hmm. In the show version, he's angry, but there's also some really strong resentment. He's cussing. He's even being somewhat cruel with the Shane mentions. The dialogue he has isn't the same. In the comic, he pretty much just blames him for everyone's death, and that's it. In the show, he does that, but he also explains what he thought his father was doing wrong. He explains that the governor was still out there and that he just stayed back and played farmer and pretended everything would be okay. This dialogue and resentment is something I'd expect out of an older and more mature Carl. I thought those changes were well thought out and helped compensate for Carl's TV's older age. That's very good points.
Yeah.
And I have to come clean that some of my disappointment is that the stuff with older Carl, yes, it's more appropriate for older Carl, but I think him being younger was more compelling.
Okay.
And the way they did that was more compelling from a character standpoint. But Chandler Riggs grew up. I mean, they cast him at an appropriate age.
Yeah.
And the ravages of a time affect us all.
Ravages. Yeah. I don't know that he's old enough to be suffering from ravages at time.
Not ravages, but for a character who's supposed to be 8 years old,
yeah,
they're sure as shit ravaging.
Sure.
So, anyway, Stephanie M. says, Terminus is the Hunter's plot line, and I believe that they are the ones that took Beth. In the comics, Dale was taken because he was easy pickings. Due to the fact that he only had one leg, Beth injured her foot, ankle, in a bear trap and therefore needed help walking. Therefore, I think she is the replacement Dale. The question is, does AMC have the balls to kill off Beth in that fashion as cannibals? What do you two think?
I feel like it's not Beth. I feel like Beth is with Gabriel potentially. There's a shot from the preview for next week where
science on me.
Rick, Michonne, and Carl walk into a room that looks like some sort of ceremonial procedure is going on. There are a lot of candles lit circle.
Was Beth serenading her kidnappers?
Beth was playing piano. Yeah, singing Doodlebug. No, but it looks like this. You can see like a bust of Mary off to one side. It looks like a very ceremonial religious room.
Okay.
That would seem to jive with the Gabriel storyline.
And it did have the cross on the hearse or whatever it was.
So some people were speculating that when Beth was abducted, that she was not actually abducted, but she was accidentally hit by that car and it was whoever took her was trying to save her.
Okay.
I think that might be how it played out.
That's a strong theory.
Yeah. So that could be interesting with Gabriel because we know he's not an evil person, right?
Right. Comic book version isn't anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Ginny K says, I think because of prison. Oh wait, this is a take about the house that Daryl and Beth were in. I think because the person at the mortuary has been around dead people his entire life, and he respects the dead too much to eat them. This is another take about Terminus being the hunters. He settles on pig's feet. Then he brings Terminus people, which isn't below his moral compass because he has to survive somehow, and at least he isn't eating them. He can then trade goods for however much payment per body. This would explain why they have newly stocked food. Also, having some kind of medical cross in their car, if that's what it is, would help them lure hurt people. Maybe hurt people make him feel less guilty. And Beth had injured her ankle. He could have seen her limping and snatched her up because he figured she wouldn't have made it on her own anyway. Maybe that's how he justifies it. Either way, I think he's trading people for food. Soylent Green style. He can live and continue to dress up dead people in his nice, clean home in peace. Too bad about his dog, though. That's dark as shit.
Yeah. Just the idea alone that you respect the dead more than the living. Like, I won't eat the dead because they're dead, but I will trade this little girl for food. That's fucked up.
It's fucked up, but it sounds pretty interesting.
Sure, I'm not going to argue with that. I mean, I watched through True Detective.
It's true. That's true. Yeah, man. People saying that I'm sick. Fucking True Detective was a hit.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck all y'all, man. That was some dark shit there. But it was compelling as hell. Stephanie S. says, I've been going crazy wondering who the guys are that Daryl is with, and it hit me this morning that they are the guys that try to rape Carl in the comics. Didn't occur to me until now, since I just assumed AMC wouldn't go there, but I'm thinking they may actually try to rape Michonne and or Carl. Fuck.
Why not Rick, too?
We're getting really dark in these emails.
We definitely are. Are they really called the Marauders? Dark. Is that who the Marauders are?
I don't know. That's like another like one or two comic shot.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure. I heard the name.
They foreshadowed Michonne rape with the thought of her shirt soaking in the sink.
Yeah.
Made all the guys rapey. And Daryl's discussion with the creeper in the woods showed that this guy isn't interested in little ones. I think scenes for the next week with Rick are not at Terminus, but somewhere else where they get caught up with Joe's group. Maybe we'll even see them Daryl sacrifice himself to save Rick, Carl, and Michonne. I don't know. Rape is a really heavy topic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm nervous about this show going there. Like,
you don't think the show can handle it? Like, well, just don't have the faith that they can write it, I guess, deftly enough that...
Like, so, you know, it's just like, I don't know. It's like killing babies.
Lizzie.
You know, raping people and killing babies are something that's so heavy, and also that so many, you know, many people have lost lost children. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, many people in this world have been sexually assaulted. And it's a very uncomfortable topic for everyone to approach upon. So if you're going to do that, you better have a fucking point that's beyond, ooh, we want to move the needle on ratings.
Yeah, yeah.
Because else it's going to come across as exploitative and just kind of gross. So sure. I hope if they do go there that, number one, they really pressed up home the point that the people doing this are scumbags, that the victim somehow is able to win and, mm-hmm. you know, overcome and conquer this. I don't know. Like I said, I get, when I see stuff like that, I get really kind of like, you know?
Yeah. It's a topic you need to think about before you approach it.
Yeah, I mean, this is shit that real people have gone through, and it's something that you have to not tiptoe around, because I don't believe anything's off limit for arts, but it better fucking mm-hmm. be art.
Yeah,
if you're going to go there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because people are going to fucking come after you regardless. So you better, you know, if you want me saying no, that was justified, it better be really well done.
Yeah.
Robbie says, I got to thinking about how the Hunter's plot line from the comics could be be represented as the Terminus plot line of the TV show. And I came up with a theory. My memory of the arc is from the comics is spotty, but in the comics, Dale, who had a wounded leg, was preyed on by the Hunters. In a TV show, it's Tara who has a wounded leg. Granted, Dale had been bitten and Tara seems only to have sprained her leg. Shit, that thing's shattered. And like, she's got roughly 500,000 bones in her left foot now.
Yep.
Still, the similarities are leading me to believe that Tara will take Dale's place in the comics and fall prey to the Hunters. Of course, the way it plays out would be very different if Terminus is indeed the home of the Hunters. In the comics, they capture Dale in the woods and take him back to their lair, and Rick's group has to track him down. In Terminus, everyone would already be in their lair. Yep. I mean, and that's the kind of, you know, Walking Dead remix that Kirkman seems to like doing.
Yeah,
that I'm not so much a fan of, but maybe.
Sure.
And Tara, again, I've always seen her as kind of like a half season type character. So that would work in kind of well for that. But she's kind of growing on me, too.
Yeah. Especially after her saying, oh, yeah, after Terminus, I'll go along to DC with you. Well, you may not get that chance.
Edwin C. Ooh, yeah. Edwin C. says, I've been saying it since we first started Terminus that this was not a sanctuary but a trap. I don't know if Terminus will house the Hunters exactly, but it's definitely looking like they might at least be cannibals by the look of Mary's big-ass grill. Is that a shot of Denise's mouth?
What? Her big-ass grill?
Look at the chomp. I mean, she could just bite the ass off somebody. Tear it right off. No, he's talking about her barbecue joint.
Yes. Well, she could barbecue other things.
I was going to say,
she can grill whatever she wants.
Yeah, I got a grill I could barbecue a person on, but it doesn't mean that I do. Jesus. Let's not be judging people on their grills now, Edwin. The place also resembled the sanctuary, the home of the saviors. Very good point, but I still think it's too soon to introduce them, and the word of Kirkman says that that's not going to happen, so...
For Negan, yeah.
Yeah. I'm starting to come around to Tara, and I couldn't help but love Eugene in this episode. His ranting to Tara reminded me of the part in the comics where he was ranting about to a priest about his thoughts on Christianity and how I feel when I geek out in front of people who have no idea what I'm talking about. I think this next episode will see our groups reunite to escape this hell and continue on with Abraham and company to Washington, D.C. I think the show will continue with this on this road. On the road method to start next season, leading up to the group finding the Alexander safe zone at the mid-season finale. We still have a lot of story left before they reach there, such as Abraham and Rick clashing for leadership of the group. A quick pit stop to Rick's hometown to retrieve Morgan. Another pit stop which shows Rick's fury when someone threatens Carl and the discovery of a herd of thousands. We know that they're hinting about that possibility, at least the latter one. Mm-hmm. The possibility that the Huntress storyline, or the possibility of the Huntress storyline of the current one turns out to be something different. Attempted suicide by Maggie, although this could be a different character in the show. And director discovery of Eugene's real agenda. Yeah, man, the Huntress storyline is just such a perfect, like, 3-episode arc that you could really do on a small screen budget. It boggles my mind that Kirkman wouldn't be like, I just want to film that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we're going to fuck around with everything else, that is a made-for-TV event that's compelling as hell. And again, I just don't understand why they wouldn't just shoot that. It's fucking storyboarded.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Anyway,
maybe they will.
He goes on, major spoilers. In the comics, Rick and Abraham have a great relationship down the road, but when they first meet, it shows us just how scary it is to cross either of these two characters. They both go so far as to plot how they could kill each other, and then even attempt to in some cases. It isn't until they share a moment that they can relate about how they got fucked up during the zombie apocalypse that they become friends. Are you interested in seeing a Rick and Abraham showdown? Do you see that as being inevitable?
Not yet, because I haven't read the comics, and the show has not even introduced them to one another yet.
I see this happening.
So, okay. Having read the comics, yeah, how does that go?
Well, I'm just saying just how Rick treated Tyrese, and Tyrese's relatively meek, pacifist almost, mm-hmm. demeanor, at least when he's not enraged over the death, impending death of his sister.
Yeah.
Versus Abraham, I like to fight.
That's true.
I like to tell people how it's going to be. I just think that is that's a thunderstorm that's going to come to a head.
Yeah. No, you could be right.
So, yeah, that's all we got for spoilers, man.
Oh, okay. Anything else we want to talk about, or is that it for the show?
That's it for the show.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'll see you on Sunday.
See you Sunday night.